We are talking with Susan Massino about the unbelievable tragedies with people whose lives have been associated in one way or another with Buddy Holly, who died in a tragic plane crash back in 1959. So we will be back with your calls and Susan next on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back with Susan Massino. Susan, Elvis hit it big in 1956. He was on his way to international stardom. Where did Buddy Holly fit in with Elvis? Were they rivals, friends, do you know?
Actually, Buddy Holly opened for Elvis.
He opened for Elvis. He was the warm-up act.
He did, yes.
Whenabouts and, was that?
I'd have to look up the year, but again...
Had to be the 50s.
Elvis, you know, passed away at 42. So, yeah, I'll have to look this up.
What would Elvis be right about now? 90-something?
Yeah, well, 85, I think his widow is 85.
I wonder if he'd still be playing. Tony Bennett still plays, yeah. You never know. You never know.
Okay, let's see. That was in Buddy Holly opened for Elvis on February 13th, 1955 at the Fair Park Coliseum in Lubbock, Texas.
I love that stuff.
So he did have a connection with Elvis.
And look at the tragedy that faced Elvis.
I know. 42, died the same age as his mother. His mother died at 42.
Absolutely. Did that bother Elvis?
After his mother passed, they say he wasn't the same person after she died.
That's true. Tommy says he'd be 84 right now. Still rocking it, shaking and doing his thing. I bet people would still go see him. Wayne Newton's still doing his thing, Susan, isn't he?
Who's that now?
Wayne Newton.
I think he's still playing Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. Let's take some calls for you. You ready?
Yes.
Let's go to Lubbock, Texas, the home of Buddy Holly, as a matter of fact. Sherry's with us. Hi, Sherry. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Hey, do they still talk about Buddy Holly out there in Lubbock?
Oh, absolutely.
They do.
Absolutely. And my quick story was that I was a home health nurse, and I went to a small town called Slayton, just right outside of Lubbock, and I took care of this little lady, and I walked into her home, and she had a beautiful picture of Buddy Holly above her fireplace, and her daughter came in. I thought it was her daughter, and she said, "Oh, this is my stepdaughter Peggy. She's in from California. She's researching a book." And I said, "Oh, okay, that was nice to meet you." And went ahead and took care of the little lady. And the more I thought about it, I thought, this is odd. And I, when I was finished, I went out to the car, and I just almost got out of her driveway, and I thought, Peggy.
Was that the Peggy Sue?
And I went back in and I said, "Excuse me, are you Peggy Sue? Peggy Sue?" She says, "Yes, darling, I am."
I love that. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
It was the most cool thing, yes. And it was just a sweet story. I mean, I know there's so many tragic things, but it was a sweet story, and I've never forgotten it. It's been 30 years, but it was a great story.
That is a great story. Great story. I think Buddy Holly dated her, didn't he?
He did. He did. Peggy Sue Guerin, and I've met her several times during, you know, while she was still around. And she dated one of his buddies in the band more than they just didn't get along.
They'd go out a couple times.
Didn't get along. But yes, you go out to the cemetery here at the Lubbock Cemetery, and you see his headstone, and there are guitar picks. There is all sorts of things, you know, as people come to pay their respects. It's a great thing.
That's a great story. Thanks, Sherry. Susan, I wonder how big do you think Buddy Holly would have been had he not died so early?
Oh, he was definitely one of the pioneers of rock and roll, so I would think that he would have become as big as Elvis in his own right. He was such a great performer, and he was only 22.
And Richie Valens was on his way too, wasn't he?
Who is that now? I'm sorry.
Richie Valens was on his way too.
Oh, he was only 17 at the time, and he had O'Donna, you know, he had Come On, Let's Go and La Bamba. He had three hit songs, and he was definitely on his way.
That was a great movie, by the way, that the Richie Valens story. I really
like
that.
Yeah, so sad.
His,
it's just horrible.
His brother in the movie, Bob, we have met at some events. Great guy.
Oh, how that's fascinating.
Great guy.
It's got to be hard, though, you know, to lose Richie like they did at 17. I mean, that's just unimaginable.
Let's go to Harry in Brooklyn, New York, first-time caller. Harry, go ahead, sir.
Oh, no, I'm not the first time. I've been around a little bit, George. How are you?
How'd you sneak in on the first-time caller line?
Oh, sorry. I must have thought.
That's
I meant
okay.
to get in the wild card
line. I'll give you a pass. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. It's great to see you. I love your show.
Thank you.
Rick Nelson, the back of that plane, he died freebasing cocaine. The reason I know that is because when the plane landed, him and his girlfriend burnt up, but the pilot lived and was able to tell the story. But this is the real story I wanted to tell you. Dion was on a TV show. I think it was called Christopher Street or something. And it was a special. They extended it an extra half an hour. And they were talking with him. And he said that he had flipped the coin for Richie Valens to see there was one seat left on the plane. And Dion lost the flip. And Richie Valens got the seat. Unfortunately, he really lost. And Dion, because he didn't have much money, figured it was better off because this way he could save the money to eat. And then meet up with them later at a concert, and they would all, you know, play the concert. But unfortunately, he found out that they didn't make it. My mother knew Dion, and she used to work for Laurie Records. And when Laurie Records folded, she went over to Columbia Records to work over there. She was a bookkeeper with a friend.
Uh-huh.
And Dion used to come in and out of Laurie all the time saying hello to her. She said he was very nice, very personable young man.
Great talent.
Excuse me?
He was a great talent.
Yeah, oh, he still is. He's still singing.
Is he really?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. He put out a CD. I know a friend of mine who owns a CD shop told me he's still singing, which was amazing. And it's, anyway, so what's funny was, so she goes to Columbia with a friend, and their bookkeeper's over there, right? Because Laurie Records folded. He walks in one day and he says, "Fanny, what are you doing? Are you following me?" So she says, "No." But what was great about it was when she was with Laurie Records, I used to get all his singles. You know, When You Wish Upon a Star, Teen Angel, and whatever.
Oh, they were all classics.
Right. And they were what do you call it? Not for sale samples. So I used to get all the 45s. That he, you know, he had sung before they were marketed. And then when my mom went to Columbia, that's when he came out with his album, The Wanderer, which was a big hit.
Well, that was a big one. You're right.
Yes, it was. And I got a free Wanderer, you know, album, which was great.
Was it Dion and the Belmonts?
Dion and the Belmonts was with Laurie Records. And then He sang all those little singles with Dion and the Belmonts, and then he broke off with them, and he went to Columbia when he went out on his own with the first album, The Wanderer.
Do you still have those 45s, Harry?
No, they're gone, unfortunately.
Oh, they would have been worth something, I bet.
Probably, but, you know, I was a kid. It was fun, you know, to listen to them.
Well, you know, I wish I still had my baseball cards. They would have been worth a fortune, but I can't find them. I think Mom threw them away or gave them away, and they're gone. Simple as that. Harry, thanks for that story. That's a neat story, Susan.
Yeah, and I did read that, too, that a lot of people say that it was Tommy Alsup that gave up his seat, but I've also read, too, that it was Dion that did it. So both of those stories have been reported a lot. And, you know, Harry knows. So I'm glad he called in.
It just if they could only turn back the clock.
Oh, I
My gosh, if they could only turn back the clock. Next up, Frank in Hollywood, Maryland. Hey, Frank, go ahead.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you. I think you both are familiar with the phrase 6 degrees of separation. I wanted to know if this anomaly affected the band named after Buddy, the Hollies, or the English rock group. And some of them wore the horn-rimmed glasses that there was thousands of these glasses made, and people wore them not because they needed them to read, but they just wore them for looks.
They wanted to look like Buddy.
By the way, Richard Valens, O'Donnell, that's one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard in my 72 years. I once did a grid on the band The Birds when they broke up and reformed and broke up again. The different guys that left the band and formed their own bands, the grid I did, I stopped after 100 people. I just stopped doing it because it would be endless, actually.
Jeez.
So try it sometime. And then the other question is, Buddy's plane, the plane he was on, where is that now, and did that curse or anomaly affect?
Well, that plane was demolished into little tiny pieces, but I don't know where are the remnants of that plane, Susan. Do you know?
I don't know, but I do know that Buddy Holly's glasses were actually found after the field unthawed and sat in the police station in Iowa for 21 years before they were returned to his widow, and now they're in his museum in Texas.
He's got a museum in Texas?
Yes.
Small, big? Have you been there?
No, I haven't, but I would love to someday go there because, as you can tell, you know, he would have been a superstar if he would have lived.
Oh, there's no question about it. And, you know, that was the heyday of radio with music on radio stations all over the country. And what a classic thing that would have been. My gosh. But I would have loved to have seen him with Elvis. That would have been a great concert.
Oh, I would have loved to see that, too, for sure. I mean, that's, you know, just thinking of the two of them together. And it is sad, you know. I mean, Buddy at 22 and then Elvis at 42. And this whole thing even connects the Beatles to Buddy Holly because the Beatles were fans of Buddy Holly, and they chose the name the Beatles in reference kind of to the Crickets.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
They started calling themselves the Silver Beatles, and then they dropped the silver and changed the Beatle beats to, you know, like a beat. Instead of EE, they put an A in there. But he was very, very influenced by Buddy Holly. And then he was shot to death at the age of 40.
Jeez. What is it that got you interested in being a rock historian?
I love everything about it. I've listened to music since I was a little kid because my parents owned the ballroom in Sauk City, Wisconsin, and they used to put me in front of the jukebox to keep me amused, and I've just loved the stories behind it, especially, you know, Hank Williams and Buddy Holly. I mean, you know, the Beatles, there's so much to it, and it's always fascinating.
Any strange stories behind the life of Johnny Cash?
I'm not too sure about that. I'd have to really look into it. I know he struggled a lot in his life. And June Carter Cash was really his savior.
Yeah.
Because of the drugs and drinking that he was doing.
Yeah, he was on a collision course.
Oh, he was, yes. And she saved him, and he lived a long life and died 4 months after she died.
Let's go to Diana in Manhattan. Welcome to the program. Hi, Di. Go ahead.
Hi. I love your show.
Well, thank you.
I have a friend who lives at the Brevoort in Greenwich Village, which is the building Buddy Holly lived in briefly until, you know, he was in that horrific crash. It's apparently a spectator sport in that building to go to the door of his old apartment because apparently he appears there now and then, especially late at night. But I personally think it's just an apparition. It's not a real ghost because it's always the same view of him that
mm-hmm.
people have.
Mm-hmm.
But it's some kind of image of him for some reason.
Yes, standing there with his arms folded looking at the door.
He's everywhere.
Aww.
What keeps him around, Susan? Great story, Di.
Well, I think, you know, the love of his music to this day. You know, there's people that are still becoming Buddy Holly fans. So his music will be around 100 years from now. And that the story from Diana, that's definitely a residual haunting of him. You know, obviously, he was probably very happy in that apartment with his wife, and it doesn't surprise me that he would be seen there.
Were there any stories revolving the others who died, the Big Bopper, Richie Valens?
I haven't really found any of those yet, but Chad Lewis mentioned to me that there are also sightings that have taken place in the field where the plane crashed. So it's possible, but I haven't found a lot on that.
Who owned that plane, do you know?
I think they chartered it from somebody. I think they called a service.
And then the 21-year-old kid was the pilot.
And he wasn't really trained to just go on his, you know, on the instruments alone, and wasn't really the person to be behind, you know, flying the plane in that kind of weather.
No, that was not the kind of day to fly, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Why didn't they just say, I'm not flying, we can't go up? Why don't they say this?
That's what I don't understand, and I think it all comes down to, you know, it's always you got to make it to the gig no matter what. You don't get paid if you don't. The same thing happened with Hank Williams Sr. The reason why he was on the road trying to play those last two dates is because he was trying to prove that he could be reliable and show up and perform. And really, he should have been in a hospital. But they want the moneymaker back up on stage no matter what it takes.
How many superstars have died in single-engine, small-plane crashes? It's uncanny, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's got to be in the dozens, I would say.
The other 20 that you didn't put on the list here, would we know any of them by name?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. There was John Lennon.
Yeah.
Bill Haley. He opened, Buddy opened for Bill Haley. And in 1981, Bill Haley suffered a fatal heart attack at the age of 55.
That's young. And we know what happened to John Lennon. What was John's relationship with Holly?
Well, he loved Buddy Holly, and that's why he chose the name The Beatles, because of the cricket.
He did that. Okay, Susan, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Susan's website is her name, SusanMassino.com. We've got it linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, pharmacist Ben Fuchs joins us for a couple hours from criticalhealthnews.com. It'll take your calls, so get ready for that. And then Jeffrey Doherty joins us to talk about alien agenda in the New Testament. Should be fascinating. Make sure you're part of the program. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our final segment with Susan Massino. Susan, would you say that, given the rock status of most of these people who have passed on, that they lived a reckless life and maybe they pushed things too far?
Well, I think you can look at it that way, but some of them did, definitely, with drug abuse and things like that. But I think that the life of a performer that has to tour like they do, it takes its toll. It really does.
On all of them.
Yes. It's grueling. I don't know how they do it. I honestly don't, especially, you know, people that are still touring in their 80s. And there are some people, or even the Stones, you know, the drummer's 79. And it's you have to take care of yourself because it's a very rough life.
That sure is. Okay, let's go to Helena in New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Hi, Helena.
First of all, thank you so very much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I realize tonight's program is devoted to Buddy Holly, But as I explained to your call screener, I have a special connection, a spiritual connection to Whitney Houston and her daughter, who, as you know, next Tuesday, February the 11th, would be the 8th anniversary of her passing.
Yep, that's true.
And 3 years later to the day when they found her daughter.
Yep.
I never met either Sister Whitney, as I refer to her, or her daughter. However, as I said, I do have a spiritual connection to both, and I would like to share it with you.
Go ahead. What was that?
What?
What was the connection?
All right. First of all, February the 11th, the day Sister Whitney passed and the day that they found her daughter's body, would have been the birthday of my father. And unfortunately, a week and a half later, when she was they had her funeral, was the same day as my father passed.
Oh,
my father passed a week after his birthday, which was the day of Sister Whitney's funeral.
Okay.
After they found Sister Whitney's daughter, as we all know, she was hospitalized, she was in a coma, and she began making strides. She would move her fingers, she would blink her eyes. And I sent a contribution to my synagogue in memory of my father and Sister Whitney, and also for a special prayer for her daughter. 2 days after I sent the contribution or gift, I'd rather use the word gift,
sure,
to my synagogue, I realized that I had misspelled the name of Sister Whitney's daughter, which of course is spelled B-O-B-B-I-K-R-I-S-T-I-A-N-A, Bobby Christina. I called my synagogue hoping to correct it because they would be sending the acknowledgement to their respective church in Newark, New Jersey. Unfortunately, I spoke to a person in the office that told me that they had already sent out the acknowledgement.
Too late, huh?
When they sent me a copy of the acknowledgement, and I give you my word of honor, I never opened it. I don't know why, but I never opened it.
Why not?
I'm referring, well, that proverbial still small voice told me not to open it. I put it on my nightstand so it would be the first thing I see in the morning and the last thing I see at night. But I never opened it. Several weeks later, I sponsored an event at my synagogue, and I had planned to speak about Sister Whitney and her holy daughter, who was still alive at the time, and she was making strides, and we were all hoping and praying for her. But instead, I was asked to speak about something else that evening. And unfortunately, the next day, her daughter passed.
Yeah, that was a tragedy, to be sure. A tragedy. You should open up that little envelope. It might have some incredible messages there. That's kind of sad, Susan, huh?
Oh, yeah. That story is extremely sad, especially for her daughter. You know, the death of Whitney was horrible. But the fact that her daughter died exactly the way she did.
Surreal.
Yeah, that's very. And the gentleman that was actually sued in civil court for being responsible for her death, Nick Gordon, he just died.
Natural causes?
I'm not sure.
Let's go to Eric in Indiana, truck driving. Eric, go ahead.
George!
I haven't heard that in a long time.
This is Eric, the mind control guy. How's everybody doing tonight? I had a couple other names come up to me when I was on hold, but I was going to ask the young lady who's the guest. I was going to ask her, as far as the 27 Club goes, I was going to ask her about John Bonham from Led Zeppelin, Randy Rhoads from the Ozzy Osbourne Band, Bon Scott from AC/DC, and there was a country singer, I don't know if he qualifies, named Keith Whitley, who died at a very young age. I didn't know if she knew their stories, and I'll listen to y'all off the air.
Okay. John Bonham or Randy Rhoads? Familiar with any of those cases, Susan?
Yes, actually, especially the Randy Rhoads case is, again, another young, incredibly talented guitar player that worked with Ozzy Osbourne. And a crazy way that he died was, I believe they were at a friend's place, and Sharon Osbourne had her best friend there. Randy was there. The tour bus was at the house, and Randy was sleeping in the tour bus. Sharon, her friend, and someone else went up in this plane, and they were kind of diving, you know, over the house kind of thing, and lost control of the plane and crashed into the tour bus, killing Randy Rhoads and Sharon Osbourne's best friend.
Ah.
Yeah.
What are the odds of that happening?
Oh, it's insane.
Being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I mean, how do you tell somebody, my brother, my friend, he was in a bus that got hit by a plane?
Oh, I know. And he was so young at the time, and he influenced a lot of people because he was an amazing guitar player. And he died way too young, and such a strange way to go. I mean, they were just fooling around.
Let's go to Perry in Lompoc, California. Hi, Perry. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. What is the name of your guest?
Susan.
Susan. Hi, Susan. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Perry?
I'm doing pretty good. I wanted to, first of all, point out that what you're hearing tonight, all these loyal fans of really good music, is how grateful I am, at least. I'm 54. I wish I was 20 years older, younger, but I got to see Elvis twice in concert, and Neil Diamond when he was still performing, and Ozzy Osbourne. Now he has Parkinson's, Ozzy does. And I just wanted to bring up one other person, Stevie Ray Vaughan, and then I have my final.
And Stevie died in a helicopter crash too, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
And
in Wisconsin, of all places.
Oh wow! Yeah, I'm from Northwest Indiana near Chicago, and Rick Nelson. The night he died, I was with friends. Calumet City, Illinois, visiting the, you know, everyone over there. And my mom and dad picked me up to take me home because I wasn't driving back then. And they didn't want to spoil my New Year's Eve night, but then they said, mom and dad was talking in the, you know, the front part of the car and said, should we tell them? It was Rick Nelson. Died. I couldn't believe that because we always wanted to go see him in the North Hollywood Palomino Club. And just one last thing. This is not widely known, but his charred body, Rick Nelson's charred body, was found trying to protect his girlfriend from the fire.
Well, that's a hero.
Yeah, that's right. And I do not believe that they were freebasing, as that gentleman earlier had mentioned.
No, as a matter of fact, I got an email from somebody who said that their friend worked with the FAA and National Traffic Safety Board, and that it definitely was not freebasing at all. The plane caught on fire, and they were trapped. Simple as that. Pete in Charlotte, North Carolina. Peter, go ahead.
Hey, George. Great show. Susan, I want to offer, I say it's a great take on the rock and roll thing, but let me offer you something that might be a little more tangible as opposed to a curse, and Buddy Holly. Well, I think it was Robbie Robertson that said, the road will kill you. And you can go back years before rock and roll. The road killed Bessie Smith, Fats Waller, you even mentioned Hank Williams. But what I contend is Holly and most of the big stars, except Presley, were all on little independent labels, having these monster hits and taking money out of the pockets of people like Columbia and Decca. I think they really tried to kill rock and roll, even to the point with the government getting involved. Like, case in point, Presley got drafted at 23 years old in peacetime. I thought that was strange. Little Richard about got killed in England a year before Buddy Holly did. Chuck Berry got busted for the Mann Act and did 2 years. And they lambasted Jerry Lee Lewis's marriage all over the place. And the IRS came after Fats Domino. I mean, when the Beatles came along 8 years later, there was no deluge of travesties that happened to them. I always thought that it was strange. But all those things happened to the 50s rock and roll stars. And George, let me just say this. That guy you had on with the remote viewing.
Yeah, Paul.
Maybe you could teach artificial intelligence remote viewing and we wouldn't have any more rock and roll deaths.
Yeah, that could be. Interesting take. Susan, what do you think? Might there have been a conspiracy to do some of these rock and roll stars in?
There could have been, but with the Buddy Holly thing, I just think it was a matter of circumstance, you know, the wrong circumstances. But I don't know, it's weird. You know, even with Stevie Ray Vaughan, he played Alpine Valley, Wisconsin, East Troy, Wisconsin, the night that he died. And he left in a helicopter with two other helicopters, and the other two flew out just fine. And his helicopter, they said that it got foggy because of the weather. It fogged up, and the pilot flew right into the side of the ski hill.
Jeez.
And killed everybody on board.
Just like the tragedy with Kobe Bryant and all those people.
Mm-hmm.
Mike,
exactly.
Mike truck driving in Indiana. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, George. Thanks for getting me in. Susan, I just wanted to pose a question and get your opinion on it. Do you think... Certainly all of these stories are tragedies, but could there be an unwritten contract with you-know-who that leads to the demise of these shooting stars? You know, Robert Johnson, the blues guitarist, supposedly made a deal with the devil. I know Bob Dylan's been in interviews where he's referred to that, Katy Perry, and others.
Mm-hmm.
Doing deals with the devil, Susan, what do you think?
Well, I think there have been artists that have done that, but with these people, I'm not so sure it was that. But, you know, Robert Johnson, you know, it started with him because he actually left town and rode the trains up to Chicago and learned how to play better and came back a year later, and they couldn't believe that he got better that quickly. So that started the fable of him, you know, making a deal with the devil. There are definitely celebrities that do that and have even admitted doing that.
What about Jimmy Page?
Oh yeah. He's an interesting character, and they have, you know, they suffered the loss of John Bonham, and then Robert Plant's son, 5-year-old son, died.
And
Jimmy Page has fooled around with things that I don't like to go near.
Susan, keep in touch with us. What's your next project?
An updated version of the story of AC/DC, Let There Be Rock, should be out this spring. I don't have an exact date yet. And I'm going to just continue writing and researching.
All right, my dear. Thank you so much for being on the program. Always like it when you come on because you bring us some great new information. Susan Massino, her website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.